Hey, if you've got a Bible, turn to Genesis chapter 29. Genesis chapter 29. Okay, we started this series last week, and we're going to be in this series for a while. But in reality, when you walk through Joseph's story, it's real important that you understand Joseph's story. Because it's kind of central. It's much like the end of the New Testament, and I'll tell you what I mean in a minute. It's the end of the story. Joseph is the end of the story. And then it's about 400 plus years between the end of Genesis and the first of Exodus. A lot of people don't realize that. But there's a long distance, much like it's about the same amount of time as the difference between Malachi at the end of the Old Testament and when it starts in Matthew chapter 1. And so Joseph is an incredible figure. He's a central figure. He is a picture of who Christ is, and you'll be able to see that. We'll talk about that several times through this series. But, you know, as we decide, I like to take a summer. I like to do this. I'm convinced that so many people today, because the scriptures are not in schools or not in, and a lot of people don't realize or get lost in a lot of these. So I like to take the time so you can know and you can understand this picture. And so we decided to take a couple of weeks and talk about and do a prequel, okay? And do a prequel. Prequels are popular now, okay? Let's do a prequel. And take a look at what set up Joseph's life. And we've kind of titled this first section of Joseph is how God can use your past for his purposes. No matter how messed up or screwed up it may be, God can use your past for his purposes. And when you take a look at that, that's important. That's why we're starting with Jacob. Because you're going to see just how messed up this was. You're going to understand today. And that's another reason I want to do today. So today's going to kind of follow a story. But I'm going to ask you to kind of, because it's going to look like I'm just going over facts and different things. But every one of them has an important thing for you to see and understand. Okay? Every one of them. And so if you'll hang with me today, we're going to do some things to learn at the end, and then it'll all become, okay. But, you know, you'll see it there. Remember that these things are there. These things happened in these people's lives, but there are things there the scripture teaches that for us to learn and to apply to our lives. We'll hit those at the very end. So today, okay, we're just kind of good. Last week we introduced Jacob to you, okay? And Jacob, obviously, you have Abraham, then you have Isaac, and then you have Jacob and Esau. Esau was his twin brother, his older twin brother. And when they were born, God had made a promise to Rebekah that the older will serve the younger, and that the younger will be greater than the older. So God gave these promises and said that these promises that went through Abraham to Isaac were going to go on to Jacob. Okay? And so basically, Jacob, we found out, though, was not your... He was not your poster boy for doing the right thing. He was manipulative. He was deceitful. He was basically a con artist. We found that out last week. And he basically wanted what he wanted when he wanted it. And again, I just want you to kind of see and feel these things as these two boys are growing up. Esau, basically all he cares about is being outside, being out in the woods, hunting, fishing, that kind of thing. And so basically Jacob connives, cons Esau out of his birthright, because Esau didn't really care about it at the time, but he would later, but he didn't care about it at the time. And so he kind of manipulated, he kind of conned and deceived Esau out of that. And then he deceived Esau out of his blessing. And with that, he had to be real deceitful. And he and his mother both were all in the same in cahoots and fooling Isaac. So Jacob then, you know, he does this, here's the thought. He gets what God's promised him, but he wants to get it. He doesn't wait for God's timing. He basically gets it through manipulating. I tell you, those who are manipulators, and you know who you are, I'm here to tell you, once you get what you want, and oftentimes you do get what you want. If you never got what you want, you wouldn't still manipulate. But every time you get what you want, it steals the joy from it. Because you know it's, you're not getting it because it's coming to you from the goodness of those around you or because of this or that, that you think that the only reason you've gotten what you got is because you have to manipulate and deceive to get it. And so it really steals the joy. And it winds up really being a problem to the person who's the manipulator. Isn't that interesting? And so basically, God had already promised him all these things. But he manipulated to get them, and now he's got a problem. He's got a brother that hates him. He's got a twin brother that hates him. And not only does he have a twin brother that hates him, but he's got a twin brother who's a skilled hunter. Yeah. And he knows how to kill things. And so he's promised that he's gonna kill him. So now Jacob has to run for his life. This is last week. He runs for his life. And we are kind of left with Jacob being alone out in the middle of nowhere with a rock for a pillow. And he has an experience with who God is. And he commits himself. He sees this vision of a ladder. And God shows him some things, and Jacob actually commits himself to be a follower of the true God, and he calls the place Bethel. It means the house of God, but just as a place. And I'm here to tell you, Jacob was never the same. Doesn't mean that he didn't still struggle. And we'll learn next week that he has another experience at Bethel, and he winds up calling it El Bethel. We'll talk about that next week. But again, it's a spiritual journey for Jacob. Jacob is not a perfect person. But I want you to understand that he's going to make lots of mistakes and still going to make a lot. But now he's wanting to follow who the Lord is. Okay, and that starts the last week. But today he finally makes his way because he's running for his life and he's heading east and he's going to stay with his mother's brother. That is his uncle. And his name is Laban. Paddan Aram is the place, or Haran, or Haran, however you want to call it. It's east. And so he's running there to stay with his uncle. And so he shows up and he starts asking around where they are. And I want you to know that Jacob stays here for 20 years. 20 years. Okay? And that's the high cost of being a cheat and deceitful. 20 years. And so today's title is just what I'm going to call decisions and discipline. Decisions and discipline. Therefore, the decisions that you make in your life, okay, God is at work in your life. Because remember, at Bethel, he started his relationship with God. And the scriptures teach us that he who has begun a good work in you will continue it until the day of Jesus Christ. That is the great hope I have for myself. That is the great hope I have for everybody who is a true child of God. Because God says if you are truly his, he is going to keep working in you. No matter how bad you screw up, no matter how many times you mess up, he's going to keep working. Why? Because you're his. You're his. That's good news. Okay? And so that's the same thing with Jacob. It's the same thing with Jacob. You know, I thought many times. You know, we read these stories in the Bible. You know, I think to myself, they seem like so far out there, but you know, and because in the scriptures record the warts and all, right? I mean, you see everything, every problem they have. You know, I'm glad my story's not in the scriptures for all to read for generations, right? Because it'd be worse than any of these. And so you look at them sometimes and say, how could he have done that? How stupid is that? But I'm here to tell you is that we say that about ourselves in our past lives. Right? How kind of stupid could I have been when I did that? So anyway. All right, so decisions and discipline. Decisions that he makes and he's going to have to live with, and then discipline that God is working in his life. Okay, we'll talk about that in just a minute. So really just 2 points today. Number one, then, the decisions that Jacob made. Now, I'm just going to go down through a narrative here. And this is just a whole lot of verses, and I want to kind of skip, but I want to tell you the story. Because this plays into Joseph's life directly. Okay? Directly. So let's take a look at it. In chapter 29 and verse 1. Now, under decisions that Jesus made, okay? Choices that you make that follow you. Okay? That follow you for the rest of your life. Okay, number one decision that he made was marriage. Okay? Let's read just a little bit. Chapter 29 and verse 1. Then Jacob went on his journey, and he came to the land of the people of the east. Skip down to verse 4. Jacob said to them, "My brothers, where do you come from?" And they said, "We are from Haran." And he said, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." And he said to them, "Is it well with him?" And they said, "It is well. And see, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep." Okay, so you have Rachel, who is one of Laban's daughter, and she's watching the sheep. It's a similar, believe it or not, it's a similar story, if you know the scriptures. It's a similar story when Moses ran for his life from Egypt and shows up and sees all the daughters of Jethro watering their sheep. So it has that similar feel. Both were running for their lives. We could make a lot more of that, but let's move on. And so he goes on to say, he basically says, that's Rachel coming. Okay. And while they were still speaking, right, continue to read. Verse 9. While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. Now, as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And Jacob kissed Rachel, and he wept aloud. Basically, this is just emotion coming out, because if you read the next few verses, it was a long journey, and finally he'd found them, and he'd found kin, and he tells Rachel, who was one of Laban's daughters, he says, "You know, I'm the son of Laban's sister Rebecca," and so she runs off to tell dad. Laban is his name. The thing you're going to learn about Laban, okay, is that he is as big a cheat and con artist as Jacob is. In fact, he may even be worse. And so I want you to see how this plays out and how God is at work in training and teaching Jacob. But this is exactly. So let's take a look at what Laban says. But remember, everything that comes out of Laban's mouth is suspect. Hey, we know people like that, right? You've been around them long enough to where, okay, you know, whatever you just said, I've learned, okay, I'm not going to totally swallow all of it, all right? But this is Laban. Let's continue. Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be?" Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak. I'm not even sure what that means. Okay? I think it's just a nice way of saying she was not as attractive. I don't know. But it goes on to say here that Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. And here we go. And Jacob loved Rachel. And I want you to know, that feeling would never die. Okay? He would love Rachel for as long as she lived, Jacob would. And so this is it's an interesting thing, but continue to read. This is what he said. "I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel." Oh my goodness, he was smitten real bad. Right? To serve 7 years. And basically that becomes the idea. Okay, continue to read. And this is Laban's response. "Well, it's better that I give her to you than I should give her to any other man." That's probably not the response you want from your father-in-law. "Well, I guess it's good to give her to you. Just give her some other guy." That's kind of a picture here, all right? Well, that's Laban. That's Laban, okay? So he said, "Stay with me." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love that he had for her. Isn't that sweet? So we have this picture that it comes down to the 7 years have ended. And I want you to know, I want you to think about this for a second. That Jacob finally, after 7 years are over, and they only seem like a few days, he comes to Laban and says, "Okay, it's time. Okay, this is your promise. We made a deal. 7 years have gone by. I've served you. I've served you well." And Laban said, "Great. Okay, yep, you're right." So Laban throws this big feast, and they have this big wedding. Right? And then the wedding goes over, and it's time for the two to go, you know, their wedding night. And this is one of the great mysteries in all of the scriptures. And I don't know how this happened, but when I get to heaven one day, I'm going to ask Jacob, how in the world did Laban, okay, how in the world did he deceive you on this one? You know, I thought many times, maybe a veil, maybe whatever. If you don't know the story, look down at verse 25. All right, and it says there that he wakes up. Okay, the next morning, behold, it was Leah. How does that happen? Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, I don't want to go into graphic detail, but how do you marry the wrong girl and go through the wedding night with the wrong girl and wake up and be surprised? That is one of the great mysteries of the scriptures. And I am longing to find out how that happens. I don't know how it happened. I don't know exactly everything that you put together. And so obviously Jacob, you know, goes to Laban and says, what is it you have done to me? Did I not serve you for Rachel? Okay. Why have you deceived me? Well, we'll talk a little bit more about this when the things to learn. But guys, sometimes God will bring somebody into your life that's just like you to teach you what it feels like. It's not easy to hear, but it's the truth. But we'll come back to that at the end. So anyway, I can't believe this happened to me. Yeah, well, you just messed your brother over. And so, but now it's happening to you. And so you have this picture, you know, and now you're married to this girl, right? You had a wedding, it's consummated, and so you're married. And my goodness, you know, then Laban goes on to explain, which is pretty lame, you know, it's our custom that the younger shouldn't get married before the older. And then Laban comes up with this idea. He says, hey, listen, you can have Rachel too. Okay? If you want to write up dysfunction, just marry sisters. Does that make sense? I mean, first of all, have more than one wife and it's dysfunction. But if those two are sisters, imagine, ladies, if you have sisters, imagine that picture. And so again, I'm not trying to make fun or whatever. I just want you to see, this is what Joseph came into. This is going to play out later. You're going to see how it plays out. So basically, Laban says, hey, listen, I'll let you have Rachel too, but you'll have to serve me 7 more years. Oh, my Lord. So now he's served 14 years, but he goes ahead and allows Rachel to get married. And so within just a few weeks of each other, he marries two sisters. And so he has this, he's deceived, but again, it's all part of what's happening here, right? Now, so between these two, okay, there's two maidservants also that are going to serve the wives of Jacob. There's Bilhah and there's Zilpah, all right? And they're common names for the time, not today, but common names. And so this all happens. So we have number one, we have marriage. Number two, we have children. Now you need to know these things. They just start having children. This is real important because you're going to read about these names, but this is where it all started. You're going to find out today, in just a minute, that God changes Jacob's name to Israel. And then Jacob has all these sons, and every one of these sons winds up being a different tribe of Israel. You have the 12 tribes of Israel. That is, you have the 12 sons of Israel, and they all basically became, these were the beginnings of the nation of Israel that still exists today. And it comes from this marriage between Jacob. And again, a lot of times we don't know these things because most of the time people don't take the time to walk through them so everybody can put it together and go, that's how it fits together. So I wanted to do it today because this plays into, this majorly, everything I've said will play into Joseph's story. Okay? So let's talk about Leah's children. That's number one. All right. We'll talk about Leah's children. And she had a bunch. Okay. We're going to kind of go down this and you'll see how it works. All right. Take a look now, if you will, in chapter 30 and, I'm sorry, verse, chapter 29, verse 31. And when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Okay? Jacob didn't like Leah. And a lot of it probably had to do with him being deceived, I would imagine. And so you've got this dysfunctional situation now. And again, remember, this is not God's plan. Never has been God's plan. Jesus was asked about this, and Jesus made it very plain that in the beginning, God's plan was one man and one woman. This is polygamy was never part of God's plan, even though it happened. So whenever you understand why does God have a commandment, it's to protect you. It's not to keep you away from something, it's to protect you. But every time you go against it, then you wind up, you know, paying the consequences for it. And Joseph is going to pay for a lot of the consequences because of things that happened long before that he didn't have anything to do with. But he was going to pay the consequences for a lot of decisions that were happening here. Well, Jacob really didn't like Leah, but he loved Rachel. And it just, you see it. It's not right, but you see how it happened. If you wind up marrying the wrong girl, you know, you could feel a little defrauded. And so this is what happens. But God begins to bless Leah, okay? And she starts having children. That was a big deal at the time, right? And he opened room. And then all of a sudden she began to conceive. You can see some of this. Look at verse 32. She conceived and bore a son. She named him Reuben. Reuben was the oldest. And he was for a long time the one who was in line to be the leader of Israel. But through a series of events and bad decisions, you know, Reuben, if you know his story, he wound up being overshadowed. But she says, she calls him Reuben, and she says, because the Lord has looked on my affliction, for now my husband will love me. She's thinking, wow, if I have a son, then he's going to love me more than Rachel, because she's not having any children. And if you know anything about the day or the times, then you understand what a big deal this is. We'll continue to read. She conceived again and bore a son, and because the Lord had heard that I am hated, he has also given me this son also, and she called him Simeon. And again, she conceived and bore a son and said, now, this time my husband will be attached to me. Every time in the names of these kids, basically she's naming them, well, maybe now my husband will love me. Well, maybe now he'll be attached to me because of all these children. It's interesting, isn't it? All right, continue reading. His name is Simeon. And then the next one is attached to me and the three sons. Therefore, his name is Levi. Now, the third son, Levi, winds up being the priestly tribe. This is the tribe of Moses and Aaron. And it winds up being the Levites, right? Levites. And so it's an interesting, just where you see him, just so you can put it all together. Look at the fourth one. And she conceived again and bore a son. This time I will praise the Lord. Therefore, she called his name Judah. Now, and then she ceased bearing children. She probably needed a break. And so, but anyway, the fourth son is Judah. Now, that's the one we know of. That's the line, you know, Jesus was called the Lion of the tribe of Judah. So this was going to be the line of which God says he was going to bless the world. That there'll be one coming from your line, okay, that will be called Emmanuel. All the rest of it, it's all there. But Judah, in fact, today the reason we call them Jews is from Judah. Because when the 10 northern tribes got conquered and scattered, really, other than the Levites and kind of Benjamin, not really, but really all that was left was Judah. Therefore, they became known as Judah, Jews. Judah, you know, when you put it all together, that's how the shortened version became. And so, but Judah was huge in understanding and some of the promises that you'll see that happen later. Okay? So she ceased having children. Now, let's continue to read. Take a look in chapter 30, verse 17. And this is a little bit later, but again, I just want you to see this. And God listened to Leah. She conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. And God has given him why he's going to call his name Issachar. Leah conceived again, verse 19, bore Jacob a sixth son. Okay, you got like that. And basically said, God's endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will honor me because I've borne him six sons. So she called him Zebulun. So she had six boys. She gave birth to six boys. And then, if you take a look at the last one, afterwards, don't miss this one, she bore a daughter. Okay, the only girl. 12 boys, eventually, and one girl. Can you imagine being that girl? Well, she's going to come into play next week. And there's going to be a lot of things happen. But we'll see that in just a minute. So we're talking six boys and a daughter. Okay? Continue to read. Skip down now go back up to Genesis chapter 30, verse 1. And when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she envied her sister. She said to Jacob, "Give me children or I shall die." And Jacob was like, "Well, what am I supposed to do?" Right? And so his anger was kindled, okay, against Rachel. And he said, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld you from the fruit of the womb?" And she said, "Here's my servant, Bilhah. Okay? Go in with her that she may give birth on my behalf, that even I may have children through her." And she gave him, her servant Bilhah, as a wife. And Jacob went into her, and Bilhah conceived and bore a son. And Rachel said, "God has judged me and has heard my voice." Therefore, she named him Dan. Now, do you see the dysfunctional mess here? So now we have a servant girl and that was customary for the time. That doesn't make it right. Just because it's custom or it's tradition doesn't make it right. We're finding that out in our culture. But this was something that Rachel said, "Well, I've got to have children, so here's my handmaid." And so she became Jacob's wife, you know. I mean, what's Jacob thinking here, right? But anyway, now we're going to have sons who are going to be born to servant girls. So you're going to see this play out in the story later, as they kind of have to take a back seat to the ones that were born to the ones that were free. Again, this is never God's plan, and it just complicates. Whenever you go against God's plan, guys, just hear this. Whenever you go against what God's called you to do, it complicates your life big time. Big time. And so what happens then, Dan is born, right, to one of the pos. Which one was it? Bilhah. All right. And then again, basically she conceived and bore another son and called him Naphtali. Right? Now, chapter 30, verse 9, look at this. And Leah saw that she'd ceased having children, and she took her servant Zilpah and gave her to Jacob as a wife. It's like, oh yeah, watch this. And so Jacob, all right, so I'm sorry. I'm trying to keep this G-rated. All right, at least best PG, all right. And so now he marries again, and it's like the war of the children here. But do you see the dysfunctional mess and the complicated, how in the world could what happened to Joseph happen? Well, if you see the mess, you can see exactly how it happened. Okay? That's what I wanted you to see today. That's why we're talking about how God uses your past that you didn't have anything to do with, but he can use it for his purposes if you trust him. And that's what Joseph meant at the very end of the story. God meant, what you meant for evil, God meant it for good. Okay? But let's continue to read. All right, so basically she has a couple of kids. We're not going to read through it, but you can look at verse 9 through verse 13. And she has Gad and Asher and Dancer and Prancer and Common and Vix. I mean, how many of these can you have, right? I mean, think about this household. Well, finally, you got to remember, all these children, you know, 10 boys, a girl, and Rachel's had no children. Then the long last day, chapter 30, verse 2 comes. And I want you to hear this. And God remembered Rachel. And God listened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived, she bore a son. And it says, "May the Lord add to me another son." And it goes on to say that she called his name Joseph. Here he is. Okay, but here's how I want you to look at this. Because it's the truth. Think about Jacob, who's had all these children, right? But the one that he loves, the one that he worked 14 years, okay, to be able to have as a wife. Now she's expecting and she bears a child. I want you to know that problems are going to present themselves because of the favoritism that Jacob is going to show to Rachel's child. And it just makes sense, doesn't it? If you see the whole story, this makes it all come together and you're like, ah, okay, that makes perfect sense. Okay, that makes perfect sense. All right, so now you have it. And then later, which we don't really have here, again, I want you to see that later Benjamin is born. That'll be the 12th boy. And Rachel has Benjamin, but she dies not long after. She gives birth to Benjamin. And so that makes, that Rachel is dead now, that makes Joseph a big deal in her father's eyes because he doesn't have Rachel anymore. So it sets the whole thing up for a lot of stuff that's going on. But now you understand it. Now you see it. Right? Number three is vocation. Okay, I'm not going to read a whole lot of this. In fact, let me give you the verses if you'd like to read it later. Chapter 30, verse 27 through 32. But basically, Jacob comes to Laban and says, you know, I've served 14 years, I'm going home. And Laban says, oh, no, wait a minute. Okay, I have found out, and it's pretty obvious, that I'm being blessed because of you. I mean, the herds that I have are increasing in huge number, and it's all because of you. I know it's all because of you. So I want you to stay around, and I want you to be here. Therefore, tell me what you want to earn. And so, you know, Jacob just comes up with a plan that, you know, speckled or striped type of the herds will be his, and those that aren't won't be. And then through a series of events, God begins to bless him, and so they do that. And pretty soon, I want you to know that he's basically, his vocation is the shepherd, and he becomes extremely wealthy because God blesses him. And so he stays another 5 or 6 years. And through it, every time God blesses him and makes him a wealthy person. But there comes time, 6 years later, about 20 years into it, it's time to go back home. Which brings us to number four, which is a major move. It's time to go back home. Now here's the picture. Continue to read. Chapter 31, verse 1. Now Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, Jacob has taken all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has gained all his wealth. And Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before. And then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you. So the time's ready. But I want you to understand is that Laban is looking at Jacob different because every time he would get sheep, they would produce and be healthy and do well. And it wound up being that what he owned was more than what the guy who started him out was. And so there started to be some real tension and some real problem, which always makes sense. All right. So take a look now and take a look at verse 4. Now Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah into the field where his flock was and says, I see that your father does not regard me with favor as he did before, but the God of my father has been with me. You know that I have served your father with all my strength. Look at verse 7. Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. Okay. Again, I just want you to underline the cheat, the con man. And, 10 times. When you get your wages changed 10 times, I doubt that that's a raise. It's more of a, oh, you're doing well. No, you can't have that anymore. Oh, the spotted sheep are doing good. No. You can't have the spotted ones anymore. You get the striped ones. And then God would bless them every time he changed it. It's hysterical to look at. And so you can read the rest of the story. We just don't have time. Okay, to really look at all of it. But it's all there if you'd like to look at it. So basically what happened is he talked to Rachel and Leah, and they said, yeah, let's go. And then basically in verse 17 through 21, Jacob deceived Laban. And basically Jacob was planning all along to leave. And he gets up and he leaves. And it takes Laban 7 days to catch him. Let's read that little part. Look at verse 22 through 24. says this. When it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled, he took his kinsmen with him and pursued him for 7 days and followed close after him in the hill country of Gilead. But God came to Laban, the Aramean, in a dream by night and said, "You be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad." Now this is important. Okay. So he left. And I want you to know that Laban is intent to go get him and bring him back because Laban sees it as all his. And basically he was warned, if you lay one hand on him, you're going to be in trouble. And so through a series of events, I want you to see decisions that were made and how they eventually went back. But number two, and this will go quickly, is what is the discipline that Jacob learned. You know, there's a lot to this, but it won't take long to explain. So he goes back and look at verse 3 of chapter 32. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother. He's going home. And you know, if you're the Lord's, there's a certain way that God's going to call you to do things. And I want you to know that the right thing to do is not always the easy thing to do. In fact, rarely is it the easy thing to do. But the one thing that Jacob's going to have to do is he's going to have to face Esau. He's going to have to make amends with a brother he wronged. You know, it'd be really easy just to run from it and avoid it for the rest of your life. But as a believer, I found that God always brings it back around to you. Why? Because he wants you to face those things and he wants you to make them right. So going home, Jacob knew that that was something he was going to have to do. And so on the way back home, God begins to teach and train Jacob along the way. And something major happens in his life that very few people know or ever understand. And I just want you to see it. All right. It says there, in fact, first thing that God did was that he got Jacob alone. So they're on the way back. And through a series of events, we just don't have time to talk about it all. But through a series of events, he got Jacob alone. Let's take a look at it in chapter 32, verse 24. And Jacob was left alone. You know, I found that if you're a believer, many times God will get you to a time in your life to where you are alone. That's when you listen the best. When you've got lots of noise in your life, you don't listen very well. Hey, I remember I used to have one of my daughters who didn't have a great attention span. And if there was anything else in the room, you're trying to talk to her, she's not hearing you. If there's a commercial on, if there's a bird flying out in the window, all right? And I used to grab her little face, and I would point at her. And I'd say, "Okay, listen to me." And it was, "Yes, Daddy," all right? Alone to where you can hear. And God begins to work in Jacob's life. He gets him alone, number one. Number two, he gets his attention. This is an interesting thing. Look at this. A man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. And when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. So we know that this man was not just human. This was a divine of divine origin. And basically the picture here is this constant battling with God for what I want versus what he wants. And there was something about Jacob in his own strength that God had to get him and to teach him what it meant to depend or to have faith in God. And so there's this picture of a hip being put out of place. And I want you to know that Jacob walked with a cane for the rest of his life. But there was this picture that after this, that is that God weakened him so that he could be strong through him. God weakened Jacob, listen to this, so that he couldn't run. So that when he faced Esau, he had nothing to depend on but God because he couldn't get away from him. Right? So number three, then at this point, God gave Jacob a new name. Okay, take a look at the verse. goes on to say there, you know, the man said, let me go. And Jacob says, not unless you bless me. And then it says, and he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. And then he said to him, and basically continue reading. He said, basically, he said, my name is Jacob. He says, then he said, your name will no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. And the word Israel, the name Israel, means one who strives with God or one who wrestles with God. If you've ever went on it, therefore the EL is God and the rest of it is one who strives with God. So you have this picture now of where all this came from. Now this is important. Do you know out of all of Jacob's life, do you know what he's known for? He's known for that, being hobbled, being weakened. In Hebrews chapter 11, that's in the New Testament, there's a recounting in the chapter of all of the faith, that all of the great faith that different men and women had, who learned to trust God, who God taught to trust Him. Incredible how it is. But basically what he said was, that here it is in chapter 11, this is what it says about Jacob. And then by faith, Jacob, when dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship, here we go, leaning or over the head of his staff, basically leaning on his staff. So you have this picture that this is what he's remembered for because it weakened him so that he learned to trust in who God was. It's an amazing thing when you see what God does in a person's life who is his so that he can learn to trust him. Okay, that's pretty much all of the story. Let me throw at you some things to learn. Just for you to take with you. These are things that I want you just, if you're thinking, well, you just shared with us a narrative this morning. Don't miss this. Okay? Number one thing to learn is that you can take with you and understand. I want you to know that discipline sets you free to do what you ought to do. Now, there's a big difference there. Discipline doesn't set you free to do what you want to do. It sets you free to do what you ought to do. You see, we've got a big problem. This is as big a problem in our culture as anything we got. We got a whole group of folks that are just doing what they want to do because they have no discipline in their life to be doing what they ought to do. Because I'm here to tell you, it's hard to choose what you ought to do over what you want to do. And I'm here to tell you, nobody makes that decision unless they've been trained to do it. I was watching a military documentary one time, and they were interviewing a bunch of guys who were over in one of the great battles. Actually, it was Bastogne, the Battle of the Bulge. And they were asking all of them, hey, well, when it got its worst, why didn't y'all just get up and run? And they said, because we've been trained not to run. Discipline. If you're going to do what you want to do, you're going to run. If you've been disciplined, what are you going to do? You're going to do what you ought to do, which is dig in and stay there. Does that make sense to you? Listen to me. Discipline is never a fun thing. In my own children's life, I'm here to tell you, it's the problem we have in parenting today. Parents are teaching their children what they want to do as opposed to what they ought to do. And when you understand that, I'm here to tell you, it's huge. That's why kids don't have the discipline inside of themselves to even make the right decision. Why? Because at the time they're going to do what they want to do as opposed to what they should do. Discipline is the only thing that allows you to do that. Listen, discipline is one of those things that everybody wants, but nobody wants to go through what it takes to get it. Why? Because what it takes to get it is hard. I had a football coach who would drive us into the ground. He'd run us until we couldn't. He said, because here's what he would say. He says, I don't want you when the going gets tough, I don't want you to quit in the fourth quarter. Train, discipline. It's not all about what you want. It's about what you ought to be doing. When somebody's disciplined enough, when they've been taught this, this is what Jacob was learning. Last thing he wanted to do was stand in front of his brother and have to eat humble pie and say he was sorry. But it was the thing he needed to do the most. Interesting. Number two, God's promises come in His way and His time. When you manipulate for them, you steal the joy from it. Number three, God will many times use somebody just like you to teach you about yourself. And that is never fun. In fact, let me tell you this. If you've got children, all right? If you've had, you know, children, got children, let me tell you what. Let me tell you the child that you have the most problem with. The one who's most like you. You don't know what I'm talking about, do you? You'll get there, right? I'm here to tell you because you know what they're thinking. And you not only know what they're doing, but you know why they're doing it. And it drives you nuts. But I'm here to tell you, you'll learn more about looking at your own reflection by saying, oh, so that's what that looks like. Ooh, it doesn't look that way when I look in the mirror, right? Incredible how that works. Number four, facing the mistakes of your past will help you in freeing yourself from them. Okay? Number five, scars many times are wonderful things. Scars, I don't know about you. I got scars. I got physical scars all over my body from surgeries and other things. I've got scars in here. And you know, you've heard me say many times that scars are almost blessings because they're reminders, but they don't hurt anymore, right? I got a big scar right here that got infected, and that thing drove just so much pain. I did it one time when I was pulling something back, and it got caught, and it tore. And I just kept, you know, I kept working, kept cutting and doing the bush hogging stuff I was doing. And you know, it was, you know. And then basically got finished, went in the next few days it got infected. And pain for days. And I looked down at that scar. You know what it reminds me? When you have a wound, make sure you clean it. When you get a wound in here, guys, you make sure you take care of it. If not, it'll mess you up. Therefore, I'm learning to tell you this. I don't know that I would trade any of my scars for what I've learned. You know, it's kind of like you say you earn your stripes. I think you earn your scars. Right? And I would not trade them. Why? Because I would never want to lose what I've learned from them. You're going to find that happens to Jacob. Number six, do we ever wrestle with God over what he wants versus what we want? That's how discipline is put into your life. You know what I'm talking about. If you're a child of God, if you're his, you know how we sometimes will say, oh, God, you know, I'm not sure. That doesn't seem right. You know, and then we try to justify it, you know, make it sound like God would want us to do this when we know better. If we were just honest with ourselves. Number seven and finally, God weakens vessels before he's strong through them. We understand that. We know that. It makes sense because those that are weaker have to depend on God more. Therefore, we're strongest when we depend on him the most. But it's not a fun process. It's not a fun process. It's a great series, guys. I know I've crammed a whole lot and thrown a whole lot at you today, but I'm here to tell you this is going to help you see so many other things in the life of Joseph. And when we see how these things apply to us today, it's pretty exciting. Looking forward to it.